Chapter 7. Knowledge of the Absolute in its entirety. Verses 1 through 3.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Maya Sakta Manapartha Yogam Yunjan Madashraya Asaushayam Samagram Mam Yatha Gnyasyasi Jnanam Teham Savignanam Idam Vakshyam Asheshata Yajnyatva Neha Bhuyon Yajnyatavyam Avashishyate Manushyanam Sahasreshu Kaschid Yatati Siddhaye Yatatam Abhisiddhanam Kaschin Mam Vetti Tatvatah.
The Blessed Lord said, "With your mind attached to me, O son of Pritha, uniting yourself in yoga, depending entirely on me, listen to the way through which you will know me in my entirety, without doubt. I shall teach you knowledge, jnana, together with realization, vijnana, in their entirety, knowing which, thereafter, nothing more remains to be known. Among thousands of human beings, only a few endeavor for perfection. Of those endeavoring accomplished ones, only a few know me in reality." In the dialogue between Sri Krishna and Arjuna, Sri Krishna often uses the word me for the real and pure self. This might confuse and bewilder the modern student. One should not forget that Sri Krishna is a perfect enlightened incarnation, and therefore is correct in using the words I and me to refer to divinity, rather than using the third person. That is a direct way of relating to the dearest disciples. Modern teachers become carried away and think that they too can talk in this way. But when they do, it is usually because of their egotism. In fact, they have not attained a state of perfection, but are trying to show off, which is very misleading to the student. It promotes only Gurudom and not the Godhead. Many who claim to be men of God these days are indeed men, but they are hardly godlike. The student should be aware that a true teacher is completely selfless and loving. When a modern teacher asks his students to dedicate their time, money, and energy, and all that they have to him, his teaching is enveloped in egotism and selfishness. If the wants of a teacher are the same of those of his disciple, what is the difference between the two? How can such a teacher help a student? A good teacher is known for his selflessness. If that quality is absent, one should not follow him. It is better not to have a teacher than to be trapped by false teachings. A modern teacher cannot be compared with Sri Krishna and should not pretend to be. Sri Krishna was the greatest yogi that ever lived on the earth. He was unparalleled in knowledge in all respects. Sri Krishna instructs his dear disciple Arjuna in the art and science of the knowledge that dispels ignorance and enables one to see truth clearly. He states that the aspirant should fix his heart on the highest alone and dedicate his whole life to the Lord, the self of all. The aspirant should not allow his mind and emotions to travel in any other direction, but should take refuge in the uninterrupted consciousness of truth, through which flows the perennial knowledge of the eternal in all its fullness. When that knowledge is attained, there remains nothing more to be attained. Among the thousands who travel on the path of spirituality, only a few individuals attain such perfection. The sixth chapter explained attainment of the highest state through meditation. Having understood the method of meditation, Arjuna now wants to know the object of meditation and an alternate method for attaining the heights that are reached by yogis. This theme continues in chapters 7 through 11, and more explicit instructions are given to Arjuna. Lessons imparted by an accomplished teacher directly to his beloved disciple have a more profound impact on the mind and heart of the student than reading and studying the scriptures. The questions that are not answered by the scriptures and teachings of the sages or by any other means are finally answered at the summit that one attains through direct experience. Without direct experience, doubts still lurk. Every aspirant longs to have direct knowledge. It is not that he does not believe in the teachings of the great sages and the scriptures. They do inspire and help him. But attainment of perfection is possible only through self-realization. Therefore, a need arises for a perfectly devised method of preparing oneself to receive that knowledge. The first instruction in this chapter is to maintain constant awareness that the self alone exists. One should practice a method of sadhana to attain that insight. For without having knowledge of the goal and the purpose of sadhana, nothing can be attained. Even if the sadhana is devised profoundly, if one does not have knowledge of his goal, he cannot progress, for he becomes a victim of allurements and is bound to stumble again and again. Many students begin practicing meditation without knowing why they are practicing. Practicing meditation without knowledge of the goal is like walking along a path without knowing one's destination. First, the subject should be known in its entirety, and then one should pursue his practice. Jnana and vijnana are two kinds of knowledge that we find in the scriptures. Jnana is knowledge of the absolute. Vijnana is knowledge for devising the perfect method of sadhana. When one attains these two aspects of knowledge, he can tread the path and attain perfection. One among thousands reaches that perfection, and among those, only a fortunate few know the real self in its entirety. Real knowledge is that knowledge after which nothing remains to be attained. The third verse explains that after attaining the state of samadhi, or perfection, there still remains to be attained the highest state, self-realization. In the state of perfection, the aspirant attains the highest goal that an individual is capable of achieving. The last step is total expansion of the knowledge that he has attained. He becomes one with the whole. Verses 4 through 7.
Bhumirapo nalo vayuhu kammano buddhirevacha ahankara itiyam me bhinna prakritirashtadha apareyam itastvanyam prakritim viddhi me param jivabhutam mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagat Etad yonini bhutani sarvani tyubadharaya aham krishnasya jagataha prabhavaha pralayastatha matta parataram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya mai sarvamidam protam sutre manigana iva.
Earth, water, fire, air, space, mind, intelligence, and ego. This is my primordial nature. Prakriti, divided eightfold. This is my immanent nature. Know my other transcendent nature, which has become the souls, jivas, O long-armed one, by which this world is sustained. All the beings have their origination in this. Hold this to be true. I am the origin as well as the dissolution of the entire world. There is nothing at all beyond me, O Arjuna. Everything is woven in me, like gems on a thread to form a necklace. Every object in the world is gifted with a particular and unique quality. All that we see in the external world has some distinct quality that is not found in the same way elsewhere. Ultimately, there is only one source from which all the innumerable aspects of phenomenal existence are manifest, but that source remains obscured from human vision. In these verses, Sri Krishna explains all the levels of manifestation, from the gross to the subtlest. He addresses Arjuna as long-armed, meaning one who has the ability to grasp all-encompassing knowledge. That knowledge is imparted by the teacher only when the student has widened the horizon of his vision. Sri Krishna says that in the external world, there are eight constituents: earth, water, fire, air, space, mind, intellect, and ego. He says to Arjuna, "These eight constituents make up my lowermost body, but within these there is another, highest essence. On this is sustained all beings. I am the originator, sustainer, and annihilator of this whole universe. Just as the beads are strung on a thread, everything is woven in me." The aspirant should learn to identify himself with the source of manifestation. Then it will be easy for him to grasp the knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita. When the student is faithful, eager to receive that knowledge, and when he applies all his resources with full devotion, that knowledge is grasped. But one should not forget that for attaining that knowledge, he needs a profound method of sadhana devised by examining his own capacities and abilities. Verses 8 through 12.
Rasoham apsu kaunteya prabhasmi shashi surya yoho pranavaha sarva vedeshu shabdakhe paurusham rushu punyo gandaha prithivyamcha tejas chasmi vibhavasau jivanam sarva bhuteshu tapas chasmi tapasvishu bijam mam sarva bhutanam viddhi partha sanatanam buddhir buddhimatam asmi tejas tejasvinamaham Balam balavatam asmi, kama raga vivarjitam. Dharma viruddho bhuteshu, kamosmi bharatarshabha. Ye chaiva sattvika bhava rajasas tamasascha ye, matta eveti tanviddhi, natvaham teshu te mayi.
I am the flavor in the waters, O son of Kunti, and the radiance of the moon and the sun. I am pranava, om, in all the Vedas. The sound in space, and manliness in men. I am beautiful fragrance in the earth, and brilliance in the sun, the living force in all beings, and I am asceticism in the ascetics. Know me to be the ancient seed of all beings, O son of Pritha. I am the wisdom in the wise, and the splendor in the splendid. I am the strength in the strong, free of desire and attachment. I am that desire in beings which is not opposed to righteousness. All the sattvic states, as well as the rajasic and the tamasic ones, originate from me. Know them to be thus. I am not in them, yet they are in me. Sri Krishna further explains the nature of the elements of earth, water, fire, air, and space. He says to Arjuna that all the powers in the universe, the fragrance of the earth, the taste of water, the luster of fire, the touch of the wind, the sound of space, the radiance of the sun, the light of the moon, the universal sound of Om, the life of the animate ones, the very essence of all beings, the desire to do one's duty, the valor of brave men have risen from one source, and this I am. These verses do not explain the process of creation, but that of manifestation. There is an important difference between these two words. The word creation is used in the philosophy of dualism. Dualists believe that, apart from the existence of God, nature is also self-existent, and with the help of that nature, God created the world. There is another conception. God, the ultimate power of the universe, nature, and the individual soul, are all self-existent. But these ideas are dismissed by the philosophy of Advaita, which holds that there is one, and only one, absolute reality, without a second, and all that we see, the entire universe, is but a manifestation of the one truth. To help Arjuna understand this truth and to expand his consciousness, Sri Krishna explains that the fragrance of the earth, the taste of water, the luster of fire, the touch of the wind, and the sound in space are the manifestations of the Absolute One. The aspirant should become aware that all these qualities of the different elements are but different faces of the same one. Verse 8 refers to the sacred word Om, A-U-M, a universal sound that is the very theme of the Upanishads and Vedas. The three syllables, A-U-M, personify the waking, dreaming, and sleeping states. But the silent, soundless sound is the fourth state, called Turiya. After attaining the state of Turiya, the wise can visualize each state separately, and yet all at once. The Lord of Life, though He manifested this universe, remains hidden beyond all the levels of consciousness, just as Turiya, which contains waking, dreaming, and sleeping, yet remains beyond them all. Om is called Pranava. By constantly remembering this sound and understanding its meaning, one is led to the state of this soundless sound. When the aspirant uses this sound in both meditation and contemplation, he realizes its various aspects. The aspects of this sound, from the gross to the subtlemost, have been explained in Upanishadic literature and other scriptures on sadhana. Before a student begins treading the path of Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga, or the Yoga of Action, he should have sufficient knowledge of the nature of his body, senses, mind, intellect, and ego, as well as of the source of this universe, so that he can unhesitatingly begin practicing to attain that knowledge directly. When the student begins identifying himself with his essential nature, and then expands his consciousness to the consciousness of the perfect state of being, he no longer identifies himself with the objects of the world. Such a state of perfection is considered to be the highest. Knowledge leads one from individual consciousness to universal consciousness. Sadhana leads the aspirant from his gross self to the subtlemost aspect of his being, and then he realizes that his real self is the self of the universe. Three qualities function in the universe, and these qualities function in the same way in the human being. Sattva is the harmonious quality, rajas is the active and passionate quality, and tamas is slothful. All of the forms and means in the universe come out of these three gunas, and the gunas themselves come from the one single source of all, the Lord of Life and the universe. The sun, moon, constellations, and the elements of earth come into existence from the Lord of Life, the source of the universe. Because of these objects, we become aware of the source behind all phenomena, the Lord of Life. They exist because of the Lord, but He does not exist because of the existence of these objects. That is why it is said, "All these objects are in me, yet I am not in them. All things are in the Lord of Life, but He is not in them." Verses 13 through 15.
Tribhir gunamayair bhavair ebhis sarvamidam jagat mohitam nabhijanati mamebhya paramavyayam daivi hyesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite namam duskrutino murha prapadyante naradhamaha mayayapa hrutajnana asuram bhavamashritaha.
This entire world, deluded by three states constituted of gunas, does not recognize me as the immutable one beyond them. This divine maya of mine, consisting of gunas, is difficult to transcend. Only they who surrender themselves to me go across this maya. The basest among human beings, the deluded ones, evildoers, do not surrender to me, their knowledge having been plundered away by Maya as they have resorted to a demonic aspect. The whole world is deluded as a result of the illusory power of Maya. Maya means that which exists and yet does not exist. The three gunas create an illusion for all human beings, and they are not able to see the power behind the illusion. All the activities of the human being, his mind, action, and speech, are controlled by the gunas, which motivate him to enjoy the objects, but do not allow him to be aware of the self-existent reality beyond all these phenomena. In the Isha Upanishad, there is a prayer that says, O Lord, remove this glittering disk which has hidden the truth. This means that the illusory power, Maya, is full of temptations and charms that completely sway the human mind and senses, creating desire for the objects of the world. We all know that neither the objects nor the pleasures of the mundane world are permanent, yet our minds remain deluded in wanting to capture these pleasures. We suffer because of these delusions. The human mind and senses remain allured by the charms and temptations of the external world, by Maya. Maya has no existence of its own. It is not any particular being or object like the sun or moon, but an illusion in the cosmos. Those who become aware of this fact and realize the truth that beyond all delusion lies the source of perennial light and life, which is self-existent, can cross the mire of delusion. Those alone who with sincere effort and the grace of God attain constant consciousness of the self-existent Lord of life cross the delusion of Maya. They have made their minds one-pointed and inward and know the true nature of the Lord. But the mind that is dissipated and distracted and always goes out in search of the pleasures of the temporal world cannot comprehend that state. The mire of delusion created by Maya is hard to cross. Maya veils the faculty of discrimination, judgment, and decision. One is then deluded, and in fact prefers to remain in that state. Those who have lost this faculty are called demonic or evil, for they create misery and suffering for themselves and others. Such people, having demonic attitudes and behavior, commit harmful acts and destroy knowledge because they are infatuated. The question arises in every aspirant's mind, what is Maya? The word Maya signifies art, skill, or workmanship. As a potter creates a pitcher out of a lump of clay by using his skill, so Maya, with her threefold gunas, is able to create the illusion that is enjoyed by ordinary minds. The lump of clay, after being given a form by the skill of a potter, involves him in his own creation. He becomes attached to the pitcher he has created. He was not attached to the lump of clay, but becomes attached after using his skill and fashioning the clay into a pitcher. Man thus models innumerable varieties of objects for his sense pleasure and becomes deluded, confused, and miserable. One who lives under that delusion does not perceive the truth that the pitcher is actually a lump of clay, to which he has given a particular shape, and to which he has become attached. The values that he projects onto the pitcher make him happy, but he becomes fearful that the pitcher might break, and if it should break, he becomes unhappy. Because of the virtues of the three gunas, one has the skill to fashion a lump of clay into a pitcher, but from the attachment that results, come all the emotional problems that consume our energy and time. When we study this entire process, we find that the three gunas create a vicious cycle that is difficult to break. Now, let us examine the threefold quality of Maya. The human being goes to the state of sleep because of the predominance of tamas. The moment he wakes up, rajas is predominant and leads him to activity. Then he likes to enjoy the sense objects. But when sattva is predominant, one remains in a state of joy and peace. The aspirant can become aware of the influence of the gunas in all human activities, mental and physical. He can measure the progress of his sadhana by observing which guna becomes predominant in his daily life. When he is sad, disappointed, and distressed, it is the influence of tamas. When he is active, busy in doing and in wanting to do, it is rajas. When he is calm and joyous and feels delighted from within, the sattva quality is predominant. Yogis consciously attain the state of sattva by applying sushumna with a particular exercise involving the combined effort of concentration and breathing. During that state, one spontaneously lifts his body consciousness to the higher dimensions of life. Calmness and quietness reflect a tranquil state in which sattva is predominant. The threefold quality of maya arises from the source of the life stream, the Lord of life. But the highest of all, the Lord of all, remains beyond them. Maya is called divine. It is a power of the Lord and cannot be dispelled by ordinary austerities and mortifications. Special effort and profound sadhana alone help to cut the fetters of the bondage created by that delusion. When human endeavor fails, the sadhaka remembers the Lord in the same way that the infant cries for his mother's help. That powerful one-pointed devotion brings the grace of the Lord to the aid of the sadhaka. When the yogi makes sincere effort to attain the state of sattva and devotes his sattvic efforts to the Lord, he becomes free from the delusion of maya. The tamasic attitudes of those who remain in the deluded state, always desiring to enjoy the pleasures of the senses, create misery for them. Because of their infatuation, they create darkness for themselves. Such ignorant people actually destroy the great gift given to human beings by Providence. Verses 16 through 19.
Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukritinorjuna arto jignyasur artharthi jnani cha bharatarshabha tesham jnani nitya yukta eka bhaktir vishishyate priyo hi jnaninotyartham aham sacha mama priyaha. Udara sarva evaite jnani tvatvaiva me matam astita sahi yuktatma mameva anuttamam gatim. Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavan mam prapadyate vasudevaha sarvamiti samatma sudurlabha.
Four kinds of people, performers of good deeds, devote themselves to me, O Arjuna. The distressed, the seeker of knowledge, the seeker of fulfillment of a wish, and the one who knows, O bull among the Bharatas. Of these, the one endowed with knowledge, ever united in yoga with a single-pointed devotion, is distinguished. I am most beloved of the one endowed with wisdom, and he is also my beloved. All these others are excellent, but the one endowed with knowledge is my own self. This is my view. Such a one whose self is joined in yoga is established in me. Consequently, in a state higher than which there is none. At the end of many lifetimes, one endowed with knowledge attains me, knowing the indweller is all. Such a great-souled one, Mahatma, is very difficult to find. There are four categories of people who are devoted to the Lord. In the first category are those who are needy and in distress, who suffer mentally and physically. They are not successful in attaining wealth in the temporal world, and they are miserable and suffer from all kinds of diseases. That type of person worships God to fulfill his mundane desires and has no knowledge of the nature of the self. He prays to the Lord to fulfill his desires and does not pray when his desires are met. That kind of devotee is the most petty one. Yet compared to those who do not pray to God and do not have any consciousness of higher dimensions of life, those who pray longing to fulfill their worldly desires are superior because they at least believe in the existence of God. Their search eventually leads them to realize the importance of selfless prayer, and finally leads them to the realization of the self, the highest goal of human life. To believe in God for whatever reason is far better than non-belief. How unfortunate are those who do not make efforts to believe in the reality of the self. They deny their own existence. The next category of worshipers seeks knowledge with the desire to know the mystery of human relationships, of life, and of the universe. That person's devotion to the Lord does not arise out of misery or failure experienced in the external world, but out of the desire to know the highest truth. His desire to know is predominant. To satisfy his intellectual curiosity, he pursues the path of enlightenment. If he pursues it for a long time and learns to unfold himself to a point where pure reason begins functioning, he becomes able to discriminate between the mundane and the absolute. That class of seekers is definitely superior to the first category of devotees who pray to God merely because they are distressed, miserable, and unable to fulfill their desires. Desiring to know the highest truth is superior to longing to have worldly needs and desires fulfilled. In the third category are those aspirants who have sharpened their faculty of discrimination and know the difference between the pure self and the not-self, the imperishable and the perishable. Such an aspirant makes sincere efforts to realize the highest truth. He searches for a competent teacher and follows the path to enlightenment that is imparted to him. With the help of meditation, he directs his energies only toward realizing the self. He proves to be the highest of all seekers. His devotion does not arise out of worldly distress, anxiety, or intellectual curiosity. In his search for truth, there lies a purity of heart and mind. Those who have been practicing the path of light and life in the past start treading the same path again and continue pursuing their path until they reach the end. The fourth class is composed of those fortunate ones who have already attained wisdom. Such an aspirant has realized the real self, so for him nothing remains to be attained. He has already attained the state of tranquility and is superior to those in the other classes that have been described. Such a jnana yogi is the finest of all. He is dear to the Lord, and the Lord is dear to him. The man of wisdom is called Mahatma. Such high souls are rare and become torchbearers and examples for all aspirants. Because of these great Mahatmas, the spiritual knowledge flows uninterruptedly. Though all four classes pray and are devoted to one and the same Lord, the highest is the realized one who has attained the state of equanimity and equilibrium. Those in the highest class do not have any desire at all, whereas the seekers in the other three classes still have desires. Such a great man is firmly established in his convictions because he already knows the truth. He knows that this entire universe has come out of the truth. The man of wisdom can never slip from the heights of attainment. He is steadfast and has attained oneness with the divine. Therefore, he is divine. When one seriously thinks about life and its purpose, it becomes clear that one lifetime is not sufficient to attain the ultimate goal. Self-realization is attained through the effort of many lifetimes. If that effort is uninterrupted, one is sure to attain his goal. Verses 20 through 23.
Kamaistaistai hrutagnyanaha prapadyantenya devataha tam tam niyamamasthaya prakritya niyatasvaya Yo-yo yam-yam tanum bhaktaha shraddhaya chitum icchati tasya-tasya chalam shraddham tameva vidadhamyaham Sataya shraddhaya yuktas tasya radhanam ihate labate cha tatakkaman mayaiva vihitan hitan antavattu phalam tesham tad bhavatyalpamedasam devan devajajo yanti madbhakta yanti mamapi.
Many, their knowledge plundered away by so many desires, resort to other deities, undertaking this and that observance, impelled thereto by their own nature. Whatever form or aspect of mind a devotee wishes to worship with faith, Toward that very form or aspect of mine I establish this unshaken devotion. Endowed with that faith, he endeavors to practice the worship of the same. Thereby he gains the fulfillment of those very wishes provided by me. But the fruit of theirs, whose wisdom is thus limited, comes to an end. Those who sacrifice to the deities go to the deities. Those who are devoted to me come even to me. Though the paths are various, the goal is one and the same. Even they who do not have profound knowledge of human existence and the universe around them, whose mental horizons have not expanded, and who worship various gods, are benefited because of the ultimate source of light and life, the only one self-existent truth. This one truth is manifest in millions of ways. When one devotes his time and prays to one aspect of the truth, he indeed gains solace and is helped. But the ultimate truth still remains beyond his vision. Only those who know truth directly become liberated. The aspirant who has a longing to enjoy the objects of the senses destroys his knowledge because his longing creates barriers and obstacles for him. Such an aspirant remains under control of the three gunas, which delude his mind. He worships all sorts of objects, experiences, and achievements in the mundane world. These verses do not merely refer to gods as we usually think of them. When one has a strong desire for an object or an achievement, that desire is inevitably fulfilled. If a desire is powerful enough, it fulfills itself. When one is devoted to fulfilling a desire, he makes that desire the object of his devotion, his God, and his devotion toward that God satisfies him, for he attains what he is seeking. In the Old Testament, the first commandment is, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." This means that one should not worship or become devoted to money, possessions, power, fame, or other mundane attainments. Sri Krishna takes a different perspective and says that if one worships or devotes himself to mundane objects, he is bound to attain them through God's grace. But the reward received is only temporary and mundane. One who is devoted to the material gets only the material. One who is devoted to wealth gets only wealth. If one does not seek that which is more abundant and fulfilling, and which is equally available, he does not gain the ultimate reward. The ordinary person with limited knowledge chooses a symbol, begins worshipping that symbol, and makes it the object of his devotion. He performs many rites because the human mind has the tendency to be dependent on the form and is not able to comprehend the knowledge and vision of the formless. One who functions from his lower mind cannot have a vision of the attributeless and formless. Even today, many religions believe that God is a being who fulfills the desires of those who beseech him. No doubt, that helps one to some extent, but still he is not able to break the fetters and the bondages created by his limited conceptions. The ordinary person worships gods or believes in the existence of God, but he is not aware that there exists only one reality without a second. Sri Krishna explains to Arjuna that humanity can be divided into four groups. Some people believe in fulfilling their sense pleasures. Others, out of curiosity, try to know and believe. And a small number attain truth by following the path of yoga. But only a fortunate few are self-realized and are capable of leading others. Ordinary men and women think, act, and worship according to the guna that is predominant in them. Sri Krishna says that one who has no knowledge of the real self indulges in a mockery of worship because of his ignorance. Those who have no knowledge of the eternal presence of the infinite are infatuated and worship gods without realizing the one truth. But those who do not worship any image and whose minds have attained a state of tranquility are truly free. verses 24 through 27.
Avyaktam vyaktimapannam manyante mama buddhayah param bhavam ajananto mama avyayam anuttamam naham prakashas sarvasya yoga maya samavrutah moodhoyam navijanati loko mamajam avyayam vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna bhavishyani cha bhutani mam tu veda na kaschana iccha dvesha samutthena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoham sarge yanti parantapa.
The unwise believe me, though unmanifest, as having come to manifestation, not knowing my supreme, immutable, and unexcelled aspect. I am not vivid to all, veiled by the yoga maya. This deluded world does not know me. Who am I, who am unborn and immutable? I know all the past and all the present ones, O Arjuna, and all the future beings. No one, however, knows me. Through the delusion of the dual opposites which arises through desire and enmity, O descendant of Bharata, all beings enter delusion at the time of birth, O scorcher of enemies. The absolute truth is not subject to destruction. It is the supreme of all. The Lord knows all beings in all three times, past, present, and future, but no one knows the Lord. The Lord is hidden behind his own power, and it is not easy to realize him. The ignorant do not know this truth because they are infatuated with the pleasures of the mundane world. They do not understand that which has the power to manifest itself as an incarnation. The ignorant are not capable of understanding the unborn, never-dying one. From desire springs the pairs of opposites, such as misery and joy. Almost everyone is infatuated by the pairs of opposites and is deluded by them. Those who are under the influence of the pairs of opposites have no conception of the truth, and therefore are not capable of comprehending the glory of the Lord. Their minds and senses remain engrossed with sense pleasures, and they do not even think of improving or unfolding themselves. But those fortunate ones who are not infatuated and who are free from the pairs of opposites are liberated. Their whole being remains devoted to the Lord alone. Contemplation of and meditation on external pleasure leads one to further delusion. But the aspirant who is conscious of the ultimate reality meditates and contemplates only on the highest of truth. With the help of self-discipline, such an aspirant acquires extraordinary power, the power of supreme knowledge, which is the source of all knowledge. Many aspirants do not understand the distinction between the manifest and the unmanifest one. The word avyakta means unknown, unseen, imperceivable. Vyakta, however, may be perceived with the help of the sense organs. The sadhaka attempts to go beyond vyakta to attain knowledge of avyakta, but the ignorant have no power to go beyond the mire of delusion created by the senses. They do not know if there is anything that exists beyond sense perception. Their minds remain engrossed in sense pleasures, and they have no comprehension of the unknown phenomena of life, of the supreme power that is eternal and infinite. The ignorant think that the ultimate truth is a particular being or has a particular form. They do not comprehend the whole. To know the whole is real knowledge, but to think of the whole as being limited or as an individual being is sheer ignorance. To regard the infinite as just part of itself is a gross error. As a wave in the ocean is not the whole ocean, so all the creatures are but fragments of the one whole. To consider the Supreme One as having a form means that one is thinking of the undivided as being divided. Sun, moon, stars, space, fire, water, and earth are but mere aspects of the whole. They are only small parts of the infinite. Instead of meditation on one individual aspect of the universe, the wise meditate on the supreme fountainhead of life and light from which proceeds the whole universe. But because of their limited knowledge, the ignorant ones engage in the worship of gods in various forms. Those whose minds are dissipated and who lack control and concentration can focus their minds on forms in the beginning and can eventually be led to the formless. There are two schools of meditation. One believes in meditation on the forms, the other on the formless. But since ordinary minds cannot comprehend meditation of the formless, a form is useful for them in the primary stage of meditation to help them attain concentration of mind. Ultimately, meditation should go to a deeper level that is beyond forms and names. Verses 28 through 30.
Yesham twantagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam. Te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mam dridavrataha. Jara marana mokshaya mam ashritya yatantiye. Te brahma tadvituh krutsnam adhyatmam karma chakilam. Sadi bhutadi daivam mam, sadi yajnyam cha ye viduh. Prayana kale picha mam, te vidur yukta chetasah.
But those people of meritorious deeds whose past sin is reaching an end, they, freed of delusion, with regard to the pairs of opposites, devote themselves to me with very firm vows of observance. They who, resorting to me, endeavor for freedom from old age and death, come to know the entire Brahman, the complete spiritual affairs, and the entire range of action. They who know me with reference to the beings, with reference to the deities, as well as with reference to sacrificial observances, even at the time of their departure, their minds are united in yoga, and they know me. Perfection can be attained by performing actions skillfully and with full devotion. When a one-pointed mind has been achieved and all the energies are directed toward self-realization, all action becomes a form of worship. Then the aspirant identifies himself with his essential nature, which is truth, happiness, and bliss. He knows that the worshipped one and the worshipper are one and the same. All the qualities of the ocean are found in a single drop of water. Qualitatively, they are one and the same. Realizing that truth, the aspirant fulfills the purpose of his life and becomes perfect. He is no longer affected by the pairs of opposites. Those who have made sincere efforts and have completed all endeavors attain freedom from old age and death. Ordinarily, in old age, the mind remains preoccupied. It goes to the old habit grooves that have been created in one's past. But when one makes full effort to meditate and contemplate on the innermost center of his being, he does not suffer from his old patterns. Death reveals its mystery to him. Thus he knows that one lives after death, that the self remains eternal and unchanged, and that it is only the body that dies. He is not afraid of dying. He remains fearless both here and hereafter. Truth alone makes one fearless. Many devotees and aspirants make efforts to remember and maintain awareness of the center of consciousness at the time of death, but are unable to do so because their meditation has not been strengthened, and their minds still flow toward the grooves of their past habits. But those who have remained constantly aware of the center of consciousness are, at their hour of departure from this world, fearless, free, and happy. Here ends the seventh chapter, in which the mystery of the unknown and the known is revealed.